This is Radio Boston. I'm Jamie Bologna, and it's another explosive week in Washington as Congress puts the spotlight on President Trump's former attorney, Michael Cohen. He spent 3 days testifying on Capitol Hill, including an open session on Wednesday. And, he didn't hold back.
I am ashamed because I know what Mr. Trump is. He is a racist. He is a con man. And he is a cheat.
But the fireworks didn't stop there.
Did the president know what was happening?
Oh, yes.
And how did you know he knew what was happening?
Because he tasked me to find the straw bidder.
I want everyone in this room to think about this. The first announced witness for the 116th Congress is a guy who is going to prison in 2 months for lying to Congress.
Mr. Trump directed me to use my own personal funds from a home equity line of credit to avoid any money being traced back to him.
Your star witness here broke the law with regards to the IRS at least 5 times.
Your side ran away from the truth, and we're trying to bring it to the American people.
Liar, liar, pants on fire.
So where does all of this leave us? And there's a lot to unpack here, so let's get right to it with our Week in Review panelists. Joining me here in studio is Jennifer Nasur. She's former chair of the Massachusetts GOP and CEO of Reflect Us. Jennifer, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us is Michael Curry. He's the former president of the Boston branch of the NAACP and a member of the National NAACP Board of Directors. Michael, good to have you as well.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So that Wednesday testimony. Kind of exhausting. Cohen made a lot of serious claims against his former boss, but I'll note that he didn't make the biggest one of all, and that's collusion with Russia. So, Jennifer, I'll start with you. What stood out to you from this marathon session on Wednesday?
So I think that Michael Cohen probably watched too many Godfather movies and The Goodfellas too many times because, I mean, he just nailed some characters out of those movies.
I kept expecting some brother from Sicily to show up and sit in the background there and just stare at him.
I mean, New York at its very best. And I am originally from New York. And, you know, I think that that was the biggest takeaway. In all seriousness, though, I think that there are some very interesting distinctions between what's morally reprehensible and what is criminal conduct. So that's number one. Number two, you know, Cohen is a liar, and so now he's going to jail. I really forget about any of your views on the president. Mm-hmm. This is about Michael Cohen and Michael Cohen's week. He is now able to start writing his book during his 3 years in jail. And this was a perfect opportunity for him to start his little PR tour before he gets sent away. And then he can start writing his book. So when he comes out, he actually has some salary because he was just disbarred this week as well.
So you bring up an interesting point. He's looking out for his own skin here. Michael, what did you see in this testimony this week?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I kept thinking of the proverb and a little spin on the proverb. Hear no truth, see no truth, speak no truth. And the three monkeys, as they say that. And the reason I say that is I think one is I don't think anyone does not believe that our president is a crook. And as was pointed out in his testimony, Cohen's testimony, he said bank fraud, tax fraud and campaign finance violations. If you're denying that at this point, then you're just an idiot. Like you just don't want to defend him by any means necessary. So I think that was interesting to me that we're now starting to see from and though Cohen has credibility issues, the way our system works is people come before you, they're imperfect. They're liars, they're cheats, they're co-conspirators. But
Michael,
still
I should note the president hasn't been brought up on any of those charges.
Not at all. But I think it's headed that way. I think ultimately the castle's crumbling and you're having more and more people, though they're not they're shady characters, who are now starting to turn on our president and reveal the president that we all knew him to be.
Can we really believe anything from someone who's facing all this prison time and who's personally motivated to save his own skin in this book deal, as you mentioned?
Yeah, I don't think so. I think it's a, you know, did anyone think that the president wasn't a racist before he was elected to office? The answer is no. Did anyone think he wasn't a sexist before he was elected to office? The answer is no. We knew this information. The man was still elected to office. So at this point, right, I think that Trump is enough of a businessman to know where he can push the limits. And so whether anything that he has done rises to the level of criminal conduct is more of the question. So things that Cohen was saying, it's stuff that we already, kind like Michael said, it's nothing new. It was no new information. Nothing was shocking, I think, to either side. It was an amazing attempt for Congress to do a little grandstanding for the Republicans to go out and try to protect the president, which is amazing, and for the Democrats to go out and do what they've been waiting to do, which is slam him publicly.
But I think from the standpoint of giving us a fuller picture of who 45 is, that's what it mattered. That's what it mattered to many of us, right? So just on the issue of race and his comments about folks in Chicago and his sort of racist comment that he made to Cohen and probably many others, it's just a validation. I think more of that builds up. And hopefully we turn the country to a place we realize that this president is a racist. And I know we're always cautious about using that word. I'm not, because I know what it means. Most of these folks who talk about it have no idea even what a racist is by definition. So I think that his testimony was critical. It provides the picture of the president that we all know him to be. And then eventually we have to act on it.
So, you know, President Trump says he's a nationalist, not a racist. And we do have some clips here from that testimony on Wednesday, where you know, this little bit of an exchange between Michael Cohen and North Carolina Representative Republican Mark Meadows, because that charge of racism didn't sit well with Meadows. And so he invited Lynn Patton, she's an African-American Trump administration official, to stand behind him during his line of questioning.
You made some very demeaning comments about the president that Ms. Patton doesn't agree with. In fact, it has to do with your claim of racism. She says that as a daughter of a man born in Birmingham, Alabama, that there is no way that she would work for an individual who was racist. How do you reconcile the two of those, Mr.
As neither should I, as the son of a Holocaust survivor.
And then that exchange sparked an extended argument between Congressman Meadows and Michigan Democratic Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib.
The fact that someone would actually use a prop, a black woman, in this chamber, in this committee, is alone racist in itself. Donald Trump is setting
Mr.
the president.
Mr. Chairman, I ask that her words
Donald
be
Trump
taken
is setting
down.
A president. I reclaim my time.
Mr.
Donald
Chairman,
Trump is setting a president.
Mr. Chairman,
that the highest office can be
Mr. Chairman, the rules are clear.
Activity.
What are you hearing that, Michael?
It's so disturbing. So I think he needs an education on what racism is and its basic components to that is prejudice plus power and privilege. And we need to have a fuller conversation about that, because I tell people all the time, I'm sexist. I grew up in a sexist society. It's not like I woke up one day and eliminated all the indoctrination that I've gotten through a course of a lifetime about women. So I'm working constantly to address that. In his case, I think what's interesting is you can go back to slavery and five Africans who were in favor of the slave trade. Mm-hmm. You can go to Bull Connor and Governor Wallace and find black folks who thought they were great people and they weren't racist. That's not the point. Your policies are racist. Your behavior is racist. And in his case, he was a birther. You can't get more racist than that. He basically
talking about Meadows.
Right?
He said in 2012, you know, wants to send President Obama back home to
back
Kenya
to Africa
or wherever it is. Yeah. Jennifer.
OK, number one, I just want to say, Michael, I've always had a ton of respect for you. I have even more respect for you because it takes a real strong person to admit that they are working on something that they were born into a culture of. And so I endorse you for anything that you ever want to do because, God, we need more people like that. You know, it is a very big problem. And I think that one of the biggest problems that the Republican Party is suffering with right now is the tone deafness, right? And it's one thing, like Michael said, having something and knowing that because of the time you were born, because of your family, because of whatever, that this is in your head. Mm-hmm. But there's an opportunity right now for everyone to start opening up their minds and understanding that we can all learn from each other, and every day is going to be learning, and every day is going to be an opportunity to grow. And I think what Congressman Meadows was exhibiting was in his own head, he thought this is gigantic growth on his part. But there is a level of tone deafness. And I think that all of our elected officials need to take a deep breath and know that everything that they say has consequences, and it has far-reaching consequences.
Well, and sort of to that point, Ayanna Pressley, Congresswoman from Massachusetts, kind of made a point along those lines. Let's listen to what she said.
Would you agree that someone could deny rental units to African Americans, lead the birther movement, refer to the diaspora as countries, and refer to white supremacists as fine people, have a black friend, and still be racist?
Yes.
I agree.
I'm assuming you agree with that, Michael.
I would agree. She put him to the test, because yeah. That's exactly what it is. Again, it goes back to this point. We as a country, clearly we expect more of our congressmen and women that they understand the basics of isms in our society, and they don't. And that's why it was embarrassing to have that black woman stand up behind him, not be able to speak.
Right.
And cart her out and tokenize her in order to represent that the president is not racist. It's embarrassing on his part.
Now, of course, I should note the president has noted many times, I'm, quote, the least racist person you will meet. But
no one who's racist ever thinks they are.
I guess that's probably true. I do want to ask, though, so we're in this, I don't want to say it's a rabbit hole, but will any of this matter in the investigations into election interference in the 2016 election? We're talking about racism in Congress and the president's views, and it's like, how did we get here from the Russia investigation and Mueller and Cohen and all of it, Jennifer?
Right. I mean, that's the thing. This is just showmanship. And, you know, quite honestly, like, this is all fascinating for books and for selling, you know, smut magazines and for radio talk shows. I mean, this is all awesome stuff, right? However, the American public, we are paying these people to conduct these hearings. In the meantime, what I would like to see is some action go on in Congress. I would like to see some bills get passed. I would like to see some legislation. I would like to see some of the tough things that are going on in the U.S., whether it goes from the opioid epidemic to real significant immigration reform. I think that that's what they should be working on. And this, I think, what happened this week is just a circus.
Yeah, but Michael, I mean, this is a very important thing that if our democracy was compromised by a foreign power,
right,
Congress should be looking.
That's not what
they
were talking about. What they were talking about is just information that everyone received even before the elections. Nothing was talked about Russia.
Well, I tend to think of the hearing in a few different ways. So one is the sort of I don't want to call it social police, social or political piece, which is people are getting to get a chance to look at our president through the eyes of his attorney. And the claims that he has. So some of them are softer topics. They're not going to lead to a crime. But then there are other things like the president's awareness of the WikiLeaks release of the emails.
There's the Trump Moscow Tower.
The Trump Moscow Tower and the timing of that and the lying about that. To me, I don't know if those results will result in a criminal complaint. However, they speak volumes to us as voters about the president we have. That's the importance of that hearing.
Well, and I think also someone on our Radio Boston staff here mentioned this week about New York Democratic Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's approach to questioning Cohen, because it seemed like she was spending her time maybe setting the table for future investigations. Let's listen to what she said.
To your knowledge, did the president ever provide inflated assets to an insurance company?
Yes.
Who else knows that the president did this?
Alan Weisselberg, Ron Lieberman, and Matthew Calamari.
And where would the committee find more information on this? Do you think we need to review his financial statements and his tax returns in order to compare them?
Yes, and you'd find it at the Trump Org.
So is this AOC signaling the Democratic tactic here, you know, witnesses the Democrats might bring in and taking aim next to the president's taxes?
Yes. I mean, quite possibly. And I think that she is setting the table. You know, these members of Congress are new. They're freshmen. They've definitely been coached by the older, wiser ones that have been waiting for this to happen. You know, but again, I think that the president was probably a pretty savvy business person. And whether or not he was the one who actually did those filings and wrote the information, or it was someone else, that did it for him is the question.
And Cohen and his testimony, which I think is a powerful piece. And I think we've seen this about our president. Nothing happens without his knowledge. Mm-hmm. Right. And that was the testimony that Cohen provided. Three different books, I think there potentially could be, of the Trump Organization to hide things. I think it's worth an investigation. For many of us, I believe this is inevitable to lead to impeachment or to him not being reelected. But I think for many of us in this country, that would be a positive outcome.
Yeah, I think, Michael, I think you're being very, very hopeful. I don't think it's going to rise to the level of impeachment. The Senate is still held by the Republicans. Yeah. They're mm-hmm. not going to let it happen. And on top of it, the Democratic Party needs to actually find a candidate that could beat Trump. Because even when that Entertainment Tonight piece came out, right before the election, and everyone thought that he was
Access
Hollywood. Sorry, every time when people thought that he was done after that, he was still not done after that, and he made the statement that he could shoot someone in the face in the middle of Fifth Avenue and still get away with it. And that's basically, unless the Democratic Party can find a candidate that other people can rally around, he gets reelected.
And I don't disagree with that. I think it's really about the Mueller investigation. So I'm not predicting anything. But I'm looking forward to the report coming out, if it does come out, and if there are findings. I think it will lead, and it'll be a test for Republicans. Mm-hmm. If there are findings of crimes on this president, it'll speak volumes about how partisan we are.
And I do want to note that, again, Cohen didn't make the biggest claim of them all, collusion with Russia, in his testimony. But okay, let's shift gears here before we run out of too much time and talk about another story, one that's reverberating across the country and New England.
This charge is a first-degree misdemeanor, punishable by up to 1 year in jail, a mandatory $5,000 fine, 100 hours of community service, and a class on the dangers of prostitution and human trafficking.
Now, that's Florida State Attorney Dave Ehrenberg on Monday announcing that Patriots owner Robert Kraft was officially charged with solicitation of prostitution after visiting a Jupiter, Florida massage parlor. Robert Kraft has pleaded not guilty this week, and even before the official charges, his spokesperson put out a statement that said, quote, "We categorically deny that Mr. Kraft engaged in any illegal activity." What do you make of that wording, saying that Kraft had not engaged in any illegal activity? Jennifer,
God,
shaking your head
I
here.
Mean, seriously, first of all, fire the PR person and fire your limo driver. Those are the two first people I
would
fire.
Those are the first takeaways on this?
Yes, if I was Robert Kraft. My first two would be the limo driver should have never taken him there and should have said, hey, by the way, you're a pretty famous person. Anyone's going to notice what you're doing. Yeah. And then his PR person, you cannot categorically deny.
He's going to have some agency over his own decisions, too.
Exactly. Yeah. No, he shouldn't have been there in a world where, one, it's 2019, and we've been talking about the Me Too movement. Mm-hmm. Sex trafficking is slavery. It's sex slavery. That is exactly what that is. And he should know, as someone who is as philanthropic as he is, he should know that this is something that, forget about what you want to do. He is a very, popular persona. I'm sure he could get enough women. He does not need to go and do that.
Michael.
Yeah, I mean, as somebody who recently was defending and supporting someone who the media would have told you was guilty, I'm 100% a fan of the process playing out. And let's see the evidence and let let him have his day in court.
Right.
That being said, if you go public opinion based on what's been released by the police department, it would seem he's guilty. I think Bob has some atonement to do. One, just even being in that place. And I think he needs to speak to that. It is a high standard we put our players to. And we see constantly every day a story about a player in this country doing similar bad things. The owners are held to even a higher standard.
And I think you're important to know. I think it's important. And thank you for noting that there's still a lot we don't know about this case. And it will play out in a court of law. But at least one of the issues that it does bring to the fore, as we mentioned, is this issue of sex trafficking, sparking maybe a larger conversation about the pervasiveness of this type of exploitation. On Radio Boston this week, we spoke with Audrey Morrissey. She's a survivor of commercial sexual exploitation who now works for the nonprofit My Life, My Choice. And she says that we've made this all about Kraft and not the victims.
The reality is that we have to look at, we keep hearing one name over and over again. The names that I'm concerned about are the victims. And again, how we can help and what we can do for the victims of commercial sexual exploitation.
So do you think we're too caught up in the sort of tabloid nature of this story, Jennifer?
Of course. I mean, that's why I said it's, you know, people say, oh, this is prostitution. Yes. However, it's more than that. This is sex trafficking. That sounds like a fluffy word of saying exactly what it is. These women are taken. They are forced to stay there. They are forced to perform these acts. It is a form of slavery. And we need to work to make sure that this has an end. And maybe at the very end of all of this, when Kraft comes out on the other side, maybe it's an opportunity for him to, you know, put more resources into this type of education to help women rise up and not be in situations where they are forced or they feel like they have to be in this business.
Yeah, and I just think, you know, one, sometimes situations elevate our consciousness, and I think him being so well known is introducing us to this issue. If you didn't know before, you know what human trafficking is now, mm-hmm. and you know the impact. Just here in Massachusetts, it even inspired me to kind of look at numbers. The work that, a credit to Attorney General Mara Healey and the work that she's done here in Massachusetts, the findings in Beverly and Lynn and Springfield. And I was reminded to go back and look at Governor Patrick's bill that he had signed, anti-trafficking law in 2011. Since then, more than 40 people have been charged in connection with trafficking crimes just here in Massachusetts. That's important for us to know that.
And I should also note that, you know, maybe we need to look at Johns as well, the people
yes.
who are purchasing these
Absolutely.
Services.
Yes.
Anyway. This has been a heavy week
it's
in review.
Heavy week.
Yes.
So maybe let's carve out some time here for our hubbubs, those brief stories or events that caught our attention this week. Jennifer, I'll start with you.
So I live in the city, and one of our biggest problems are rats. And I always laugh that sometimes our rats are the size of polar bears. Or Well, this week in the North End, it seems as though a seagull decided to take care of the rat population on his own and suck up a rat.
So we started the show with maybe a rat.
Yeah.
Michael, what's your hubbub?
Well, I think this has been such a crazy week in the news. I feel like I need a drink, and I'm not much of a drinker. So my hubbub is the Polar, the Worcester-based company in Harpoon, announced this new line of hard seltzers last Sunday. The name that was released was Arctic Summer, something for us to think about.
What does that taste like?
I don't know, but I want to find out.
Fresh.
So I'm going to find out as soon as I leave here.
All right. I could go for one of those. My hubbub is about our addiction to our cell phones. And I know I check my phone a lot. I haven't checked in the last 20 minutes. But at the end of last week, Kevin Roos wrote a great piece in the New York Times about how he ditched his smartphone addiction and unbroke his brain. He went on a digital detox and locked his phone in a box and installed a bunch of apps and spent some time reading something called a book. And I feel this pull to unplug and get away from everything, but maybe not entirely. So this week was the Mobile World Congress in Barcelona, and there are some new products on the market that can help people do just that. One of them is called the Punked Phone. It looks like a standard calculator or like a remote control type thing.
Yeah.
And all it does is calls and texts. It's a little pricey, $350. But my money's on a better deal that pushes all the right nostalgia buttons. It's a Nokia phone. It looks like a brick, and it can call, text, and the battery lasts for 25 days.
Wow.
And it costs $79.
So wow. I like
if you
want
to unplug, get a new Nokia phone.
Can we get some for free for teenagers?
Exactly. I mean, $79 compared to $1,000 for a new smartphone. That's pretty good. Michael Curry is the former president of the Boston branch of the NAACP and currently a member of the national board of the NAACP. Michael, thanks for coming in.
Thank
Have a good
having
weekend.
Me. Yep, you too.
And Jennifer Nasur, former chair of the Massachusetts GOP and CEO of Reflect Us. Jennifer, thank you as well. Have a good weekend.
Thanks for having me.
Stay with us. There's more ahead. I'm Jamie Bologna, and this is Radio Boston.
Wait, don't go yet.
Because you already know how to download a podcast.
But if you have any other tech or life question, maybe we can help you. WBUR is working on a new show, and we need your tech questions.
Or maybe your parents' questions. Just click that little phone-shaped app on your cell phone and leave a message. 617-917-4717.
Yes, we know. How quaint. A phone call. But give it a try. 617-917-4717.